Welcome to the 503 Report, where America's voice is heard. Thank you for listening online. Be sure to check out our website weekly as we bring Sacramento and the world to you. The 503 Report at www.503report.com, where America's voice is heard.
Just celebrating their 240th anniversary, the United States Marines. We can't thank them enough, and all the men and the women, of course, who have served our country for the past 240 years. But right now, I'd like to take a moment and tell you all about Veterans Day, a little bit of history on Veterans Day, which just happened this past Wednesday. On the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, an armistice was declared between the Allied nations and Germany in the First World War, commemorated as Armistice Day beginning the following year. Now, for nearly 80 years, November 11th has been a legal holiday in the United States. Now, following World War II and the Korean War, Armistice Day became Veterans Day, a holiday dedicated to American veterans of all wars. On November 11th, 1921, an unidentified American soldier killed in the war was buried at Arlington Cemetery in Washington, D.C. On that same day, and unidentified soldiers were laid to rest at Westminster Abbey in London and the Arc de Triomphe in Paris. Now, during World War II, the greatest mobilization of the U.S. Army, Navy, Marines, and Air Force, nearly 16 million people, and some nearly 6 million people more served in the Korean War. President Eisenhower signed legislation on June 1, 1954. From then on, November 11th became known as a day to honor all our veterans. The next development in the story on the history of our Veterans Day unfolded in 1968, and this is an odd one, when Congress passed the Uniforms Holiday Bill, which sought to ensure three-day weekends for federal employees. Kind of strange. The first Veterans Day under that new law was Monday, October 25th, 1971, now which led many states' disapproval of that and the change, and they continued to observe November the 11th, as Veterans Day. President Ford signed a new law returning Veterans Day to November 11th, beginning in 1978. During our brief, some 200-plus years of freedom, we Americans have been disillusioned, disappointed, and let down by our government numerous times. But on that day in 1978, they got it right by returning Veterans Day to November 11th. It is Friday. It is our favorite day of the week. It is the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. We are back, and we are going to be strong for the next 6 months or so. No more vacations, no more work that we have to do. It is Friday, our favorite day of the week, and with me over there, holding down the fort last week. Andrew, it's good to be back here with you. How you doing, my friend?
Always be. You know, it's always great being here, especially with you, Tim. You know what? That was a great, great historical reference on the importance and significance of Veterans Day. You know, we say it all the time here on this show about, you know, we've got these three-day holidays this weekend, that weekend, and we go out there and we enjoy time with our family. But, you know, we have to always remember there's a reason why we're able to enjoy that time with our family. And believe it or not, folks up and down California and across this nation, it's not because of our federal government. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Podcasting now on iTunes, where America's voice is heard. And yes, Veterans Day was earlier this week. And unfortunately, as we know, we broadcast on Friday, so we got to reflect back. But boy, was that a great turnout up here in Northeastern California in the community of Susanville, where we broadcast out of on that Veterans Day parade.
It really was, and it always has been. And I mentioned in that little bit of a history right there, that states really didn't like what happened when they changed it to October. And states have the right to set it how they want to. They generally follow the guidelines of the federal government when it comes to holidays. And through their disapproval, President Ford got it right. One of the few things that, you know, he did in a couple of years as president, getting it back to November 11th, because that was the Armistice Day back in 1918, nearly 100 years ago. So they got it right. And a little bit of music in there, the Marine hymn, probably one of the most famous songs or marches or whatever you want to say out there. Everybody recognizes what that is all about.
Well, that's debatable amongst all of the branches and the services
it is.
Men and women.
It is, but that one is, I think everybody knows what that one is about. They get that one right off the bat.
Well, look, I mean, we've got three significant federal holidays here in the United States that all relate to our historical significance within our military actions.
And, yes.
Do I need to name them? I mean, really?
Not for us, you don't.
July 4th, obviously. You know, Veterans Day and, of course, Memorial Day. And then, you know, we just got to remember that, folks, out here in California. And we've got to get back to those basic principles. And I have to tell you, you know, I'm weary of using words basic principles. But as we go on throughout our show here later on the bottom part of the show, guys, and as we continue throughout the year, like you said, we've got a pretty significant run going. There's not any foreseeable. There's maybe one little break coming up. But it's important that we start laying down a foundation. And this is probably going to be hopefully one of those foundation shows when we get on the bottom part of our show about the importance of reestablishing foundational principles. And I don't know if that's correctly put, but you know, it sounded good. Foundational principles is what we have got to get back to in this nation. And of course, you know, we have to be careful, and you know, we have to come up with a uniform, agreed upon basis for these principles. And the problem in the United States today is that I don't believe that the United States right now is the United States that a lot of our veterans died for in order to protect. And so we're going to get more into this. And some of the things that are happening on the national level, Tim, and folks out there in California and across this nation, it clearly shows that the shift that this nation has taken. Well, you know, it's decades in the making. And I'm going to go back several decades as we go along and try to identify when that shift actually began to have its successful root. And, you know, quite frankly, I was in the beginnings with it once upon a time when I attended some of those universities out there across this nation. And so, you know, the important thing for us folks is we have to begin to think about our verbiage, our words, what our directions are going to be, what our intent is going to be, and what our moral obligations. And sometimes we just have got to reestablish that which is the truth. And universal truth is universal truth. But the problem we have today in this nation, this great nation that our veterans fought for, died for, and of course, all the way back to July 4th, whenever we declared our independence, is we have forgotten the principles in which our freedom is based on.
It always goes back to what our freedoms, our principles is based on. No matter, you might think that we are into the 21st century and things have changed, but the more they change, the more things stay the same here in this great nation that we call these United States.
You know, the fine principles for this foundation of this nation is something that, you know, of course, we're always going to dispute it. We're always going to disagree from time to time, which is what this country is about, you know, the democratic process and practice of the nation within our republic. But we have got to get back to the fact that we, folks, our republic.
Absolutely. Andrew, what do you got for us
today,
buddy?
Folks, time for that. Something you should know, you don't know, maybe you don't want to know, but we're going to tell you right now, the year is 1789. And speaking of some of these principles and foundation, Ben Franklin writes, ready, the famous quote, "Nothing certain but death and taxes."
Wow, yeah, that's for sure.
And of course, 1839, the first U.S. anti-slavery party. That's right, folks, we had an anti-slavery political party. The Liberty Party convenes in New York. And then, of course, 1865, the United States issues its first gold certificate.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world you heard Fridays right after news here on 1240 KSUE. And catch our podcast, like Andrew said, the last 4 years worth, the 503 Report, where America's voice is heard. It is Friday. It's our favorite day of the week.
And now, it's live from the high desert in the Sierra Nevada mountains. It's the 503 Report, Northeastern California's original political talk show, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And here's your host, Tim Reinertsen.
Thank you, Stan. Welcome back, everybody, to our favorite day of the week. It is Friday, the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
Political philosophy, political positioning, political thought. You know, that's something that we're going to really get into as this year goes by. And as we were talking about on the first part of the show, political principle, you know, thoughts, beliefs, regionally defined, as we say all the time on this show. And I have to tell you, you know, it's something we got to get back to the common truths of this nation. And as soon as we get there, folks, then the better off we're going to be. And we have taken an incredible turn to the left across this nation. And you know what? If we don't stop it now, we may be in peril for generations to come. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. And of course, we're podcasting live where America's voice is heard. And I got to tell you something, guys. College football is going crazy right now. I have to tell you, it's something we are excited about. I love college football, as everybody knows. I stay off the NFL, man. The NFL has just been killing me this year. I've been eating some words that I said back on September 25th about my Dallas Cowboys, so I'm just going to stay completely away for that. Now, the committee has come out with their listings, and here they are, folks. Number one through number five, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Iowa. That's your top five right now going into this weekend, and there are some big games coming up, and of course, there's interconference games that are going to, and rivalry games coming up that are going to determine the outcome of the future when it comes to the playoff system of college football. And I can't think of anybody to be with us today to talk a little bit about that. Our good friend Christopher Bennett, that I refer to all the time. Yes, folks, he's actually a real individual, is in studio with us today. Chris, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. It's good to be back. Hey, talking about the top five here. The AP has their top five, but I have my top five. Starting number one, I'm going to go with Ohio State University. Number two, I'm going with Alabama. Number three, I'm going with Oklahoma State University. Number four, I'm going with Baylor. And number five, I'm going with Stanford. Stanford has that ability to beat any team in the country as long as they're playing like they should be playing.
Well, as I tell you, you know, there's some pretty solid picks, and I happen to agree with you. You know, Ohio State should be number one. I mean, there's no reason for them to be dropped out. They're undefeated. They're currently the national defending champions, and you know, for them to just disrespect them like that. Now, another thing that's happening was the Big 12. The Big 12 conference right now is being punished pretty big right now because the Big 12, that's my conference I love. You know, they don't have a playoff game. They don't have a championship game. So as a result, you don't see in the Big 12 anywhere close to the top five. But really, when it comes down to this, folks, the controversy is always going to continue, even though we've taken great steps to improve college football with the playoff system. Until we get to an 8 or 10 game playoff system, it's always going to be disputed. As long as you have a group of individuals selecting winners and losers there, Chris, that one's for you. Yeah. You know, then, you know, it's always going to be in debate. And how about Navy coming in at number 20? You know, the midshipmen, our service academy, boy, they're having a great season. Only one loss, and it's against Notre Dame, who happens to be right now number four in the nation.
Well, I love Navy. I love the academy teams. A few things to note is this is the first time Navy since 2004 has been in the top 25. And also, the quarterback for Navy is tied with most touchdowns scored at 77 I think it was Monte Ball.
Yeah.
Out of Wisconsin. 77 touchdowns.
Wow.
I don't know how many more games they got to go, but it looks like he's going to break that record.
I know, folks, we are not a sports show. We are a political show. We're going to get right there pretty quick. But I got to tell you, it's honestly great. It's honestly great to be able to acknowledge the midshipmen from our Naval Academy here coming into this weekend just after Veterans Day.
Absolutely. And quick notes, Lassen High School tonight at Arnold Field, first round of the playoffs. And we want to congratulate the Lassen Bandit football team, 11-0, on their way to Las Vegas on Thanksgiving to compete in the Pigskin Tournament down there, only giving up 43 points while scoring nearly 400. The cheerleaders are going there, and they would like to thank the community for making it possible through their donations and the charity drives they've had, be able to go down to Las Vegas the week of Thanksgiving. Congratulations, and that's quite an honor.
Awesome.
It is.
Awesome.
We love to see and congratulate our youth here in our community.
All right, folks, a lot to talk about here in California and across this nation. And yes, you know, the debates happened this week, and we'll get into that here a little bit. But, you know, California, you know, we mentioned earlier on the show about turning points in this nation. California, in 2014, yeah, it's a fact now, folks, whether we like it or not. It's a fact that in 2014 we had the worst voter turnout in California's voting history. And so with that, as a result, we saw some very damaging propositions that were able to pass. And then, you know, the propaganda behind that was is that, well, since they passed by 54-55%, you know, the statements out there about the mass majorities of Californians now beginning to change is absolutely not true. And as a result, well, we fired them up now. We have fired them up. These small groups right now are looking to actually utilize the initiative system coming up in 2016 to maybe impose things onto you folks up and down California, to impose things that maybe you don't like. Maybe, for instance, you know, repealing the three strikes law right now is going to be under attack. There's going to be an initiative of attacking guns again out here in California. Marijuana is coming up. And we said the death penalty, which we have been focusing on. And, of course, the most important one, that they're accounting on some of these deadbeats to come out and vote against all of this stuff, was the marijuana issue. And then, of course, pension plans are all coming up under attack because the small, small leftist group. And I'm going to change, folks, here real quick before we get into our national level. You guys have all heard me use the term PCS, the Progressive Communist Socialist. Well, I'm going to start replacing the P with truly what it is, and it's called the M, the Marxist Communist Socialist. So this Marxist movement out here in California and across this nation really can impact the majority of you folks because you're not getting out to vote. You're not educating yourself. You're not taking the time to read something, to learn something, because, well, I get it. I mean, you know, it's confusing. Sometimes it can be hard. But as a result, small groups, small, very minority groups are beginning to dictate over you by utilizing this referendum. I'm sorry. We don't use referendums. We don't see referendums coming, which would repeal some of these stupid laws that we have here in California. But the initiative process right now, folks, is you're under attack right now in California because of two things. Number one, the Marxist movement, they're beginning to be successful at convincing you not to show out to vote. And then number two, you're not showing out to vote.
Well, that's the key right there, because they're very smart, Andrew, using the initiative system, because they know the numbers are down. They're only getting a few million people out to vote, and they know that they have the numbers in California. So if there's only so many people who go out there and vote, they're going to have the majority, and if they can get those propositions on the ballots, they are going to get those passed.
Yeah, it's not the Marxist movement, Andrew. It's the Marxist march on California.
The M&M.
And the thing is, I just want to say this to Californians. If you think that this state is overtaxed, overregulated, and overlawed, then get up off the couch and vote.
You know, you bring up a great point. Overregulations, overtaxation, not just in California, but maybe at the national level. Is this going to, and we'll get more into this, folks, as we go throughout the year, but I want to plant a seed. I want to ask the question, you know, is this a grand conspiracy? Is it part of the deal? Is this what the Marxists really want to do? I mean, you know, we talk about how words matter all the time, and, you know, we allow these groups to be able to change the definition of words, you know, and I mean, instead of pro-abortion, which is what you are, you know, we like to utilize the word word pro-choice. You know, choice is a great conservative word. That's individual liberty, individual value, and our ability to have independent thought. Choice. You know, we all liberal. I mean, we know what the classic definition of the word liberal is versus what the Marxists have adopted. You know, the progressive movement versus exactly what the progressive ideology was has been construed and misconstrued and adopted. And we can go on and on and on with this. But until we start understanding these things, then, you know, we're going to continue to go down the road. So is it a part of a long-term plan, just exactly what Chris brought up? Is the taxation and overregulations part of the ideology and marketing plan for the purpose of putting people out of work, closing businesses so people don't have a job, so that they become more and more dependent upon the United States government, or should we say the socialist movement that is basically founded on the principles of Marxism?
California, just know this. The more dependent that you are on your government, okay, the more they own you, the more they control you, and you're losing freedom.
It was a class warfare back in the 1800s when Karl Marx, when he wrote his book, and they started that, Andrew. And we are under a different kind of, is it the same, the class warfare between the haves and the have-nots? Back then, they were pretty suppressed. 100-plus years ago, people were very suppressed. We don't think of it today as people being suppressed by the haves, do we?
Look, let's look at it logically here. And I know Chris and I dispute this sometimes, and I dispute it a lot of times with some fellow libertarians and individuals off air. But let's face it, you know, the progressive movement, okay? The progressive movement really did launch small business because of the individual's desire to have the piece of the pie. That's not a bad thing. That movement, you know, broke up the trust of corporations and the monopolies. So we see a lot of that happening today with the banks, the corporations, and now they utilize the nasty word top 1%ers. But, you know, I was watching and listening to a lot of these college student body representatives that have been on the air all week because of the whatever the incident was that sparked Missouri. I still have not figured out what sparked the incident in Missouri, but all the way down to Texas and other universities that they were calling upon this million student march that was just a flop, calling for free education. Every one of those individuals, you know, they've been indoctrinated. I mean, they sounded stupid. Let's just call it what it is. If that was my kid that I heard on the air, unless I believe that and I raised my kid that way, I would just be appalled. But the thought that, you know, the distribution of wealth, as we say, you know, society's wealth, is it individual versus society's wealth? Well, you know, that's the difference between this great nation, is we have the ability as an individual to seek that wealth within society. So the age-old question is going to be coming in to California, coming into the initiatives, coming into the federal election at the national level, you know, whose wealth is it?
Whose wealth is it? The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. 257-TALK, out of the area, 1-866-882-1277. The views and opinions expressed on the 503 Report do not necessarily represent those of staff or management of KSUE or Sierra Broadcasting Company, and are brought to you solely by Andrew Wellborn and the 503 Network.
Okay, California, rest this nation, it's that time for something you should know if you don't know. But speaking of Veterans Day and something that you referred to in the first part of the show, the greatest mobilization that we ever saw in our history, it happened in 1942 because the minimum draft age was lowered from 21 to 18. 1946. This is kind of interesting because it's 1946, but think about it. The first artificial snow was produced from a natural cloud. 1956, the United States Supreme Court rules that race separation on buses in Alabama is unconstitutional. And of course, 1979, Ronald Reagan in New York announces his candidacy for U.S. president. And unfortunately, in 1986, just a few years later, President Reagan confesses and acknowledges the weapon sales to Iran. Hello, folks. Andrew Wellborn here on the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Podcasting now on live on iTunes, where America's voice is heard, Tim.
We are, Andrew, and we can't thank them enough for that. We can't thank John Schuford enough for making that possible for us. And you were talking about a lot of things in that last segment, and the one in Missouri, racism was at the bottom of it. And I think everybody kind of agrees. I don't really know what the president or what the university had done. And as you mentioned, the million student march was kind of a flop. And isn't it ironic? We opened the bottom part of the show with talking about sports and football and college, but it wasn't until some college football players at the University of Missouri got involved in that it really came to a head, and it forced a president and a chancellor of that university to resign.
That's a lot of power and control for students.
Man, it is.
You know, then you're going to have to make that decision, university systems across this nation. Who's going to have the power? Is it going to be the institution of the campus, or is it going to be the students? And, of course, that's an age-old debate. And, of course, it's going to be interesting to see how other university institutions, you know, adopted that. But look, I mean, here is this. I mean, well, we're going to get really in depth on this, and I'm not going to do it today, but there's a reason why African Americans across this nation, you know, are feeling the way that they're feeling and the way that they are acting. And, you know, everybody that I hear, just they're just not hitting it on the hill. So as we go along throughout, you know, the year, I'm going to lay down a foundational belief, and it really has to come down to I'm going to blame some of these institutions that some of these young African-American students are attending. And then, of course, that spills over into inner cities as we go along. But anyways, let's get to that debate. I saw the debate. I don't know about you guys.
Yes.
The debate was very, very well done. I think it's probably one of the best structured debates not only have we seen this year so far, but I thought Fox Business News did a great job. And I just don't know if I'm gonna just throw it out there. I don't think that the Democrats, any Democrats, can survive that type of debate.
I don't think they can either, Andrew. And you brought up the Democrats. They are debating tomorrow night. It is Saturday. Who really? Saturday? They don't. I guess that they're very smart because nobody's going to be watching. It's a Saturday night. We have football. We have family and friends. We have the weekend. Nobody's going to be watching that debate coming up tomorrow night. But anyway, you were right. I watched it before you did. It was very well structured, very well done. I thought the Republicans are kind of coming together, Andrew and Chris. Maybe you can help me. They're allowing the other candidates to speak. There was a few moments where they wanted to interject, but they allowed them to get out their message, and we need to do that. Let them say what they want to say. I was all ready to lambaste them for avoiding questions. If I was asked, how am I going to help the middle class, and I went to, well, you know, Hillary Clinton is going to do this. I don't care about her. I care about what you want to do, and I thought they all answered the questions that were posed to them.
The problem with that debate is, you know, most Americans are going to be bored, I think. They'll be bored listening to it, watching
it. Well, no fireworks. No, there weren't those things.
It was a classroom. I mean, let's face it, it was a lot of technical answers and some issues that, you know, most Americans are concerned with, but people don't understand everything that surrounds the complexity of what's causing their pain. And so, as a result, yeah, I just think that most Americans are going to look at it as being very boring, but at the same time, boy, it was very, very informative. Unfortunately, it's not going to be perceived that way.
I think as we get closer to January, Andrew, that the people are going to start looking for substance. They want to see what exactly you have in your tax plan. What is your domestic policy? What is your foreign policy? I mean, you can get up there and you can do backflips and put on your blue shoes for a while, but sooner or later, the American people want to know what your plan is and what are you going to do to help America.
You know, it's going to be kind of, you know, the question is going to be over the next few months. And the Trump factor, the phenomenon of Donald Trump coming in. And the question is going to be after, as we get closer to Iowa, because based on exactly what you just said, Chris, has Donald Trump, you know, has he, because of his presence, because of his popularity, because of his ability to just say things with or without substance, just an emotional belief, has he knocked off some potentially, you know, viable candidates who can't get out of the lower tier as a result of him being there, that some would say bloviating all the time about his opinions?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more on what he said, but I did notice that on that debate that he and Dr. Ben Carson, two of the non-candidates there, other if you count Carly Fiorina, who I thought did exceptional, who has a grasp on things, but those two, well, I thought maybe a little bit outmatched a little bit by the politicians, so to speak, Cruz, Rubio, Kasich, all the other ones. They were kind of maybe a little bit, you know, even Jeb Bush did a lot better than he has in the past. So Donald Trump is going to have to say a lot more of substance if he is going to want to get the vote and if he's going to get to want the people behind him, because they can only put up with so much of his bloviating, and like you said, for so long, because that resonates with the people.
In my opinion, Donald Trump is unelectable. He is a recruiter of useful idiots. He is gonna take it as far as he can, but he will not self-destruct because he doesn't want to self-destruct. He will self-destruct because he wants to. I believe he knows he's unelectable. I believe that he is just.
Is he P.T. Barnum?
He's building his brand. He's building his brand.
Is he P.T. Yeah. Barnum right now? Because he had a rant yesterday of about an hour and a half, and I didn't get to see the whole thing. But what they showed on the highlights was crazy things that politicians just do not do. Get away from the stage, hike up your pants, just all kinds of crazy things that he was doing. Is he starting to maybe crack a little bit?
Well, I saw him attack Ben Carson, and he referenced Ben Carson as a some kind of connection with child molestation. And I'm just like, you know, are you intentionally trying to ruin your campaign? I mean, I understand you're a populist. You are the Nelson Rockefeller of the 21st century. And a lot of people love him, and they're sticking with him no matter what. I know the feeling. I had the same feeling with Ron Paul, but Andrew brought me back to real life, and you know, we just didn't get the votes that I thought I was going to get. And the reason is because as we get closer, America will court each candidate as we go along. But when it gets down to that final hour, they are going to pick the best individual for the job.
And I couldn't have said it any better. They are going to do that, and I think we are seeing that as it's played out with so many more debates that we still have to go out there, Andrew and Christopher. It's going to be getting a little bit tougher for the Donald Trumps, for the Ben Carsons. I think Carly Fiorina is showing that she is in the class with those politicians, I much more so than I think Donald Trump and Ben Carson.
Well, let me say something about Carly Fiorina. She is, without a doubt, the most articulate and most well-spoken.
Absolutely.
And in my opinion, best debater. The problem is she's not a male, 6 feet tall, and charismatic. And that's going to go against her in the Republican Party.
Okay, I was going to say, because Hillary Clinton is none of those as well.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter to the Democrats.
It doesn't matter to the Democrats, but to... Would you agree with me, Andrew, that this when it comes to primary Republican voters, you know, being a female might count against you?
Oh, boy. I mean, you're opening up a real big Pandora's box there. I mean, the reality is that the question is going to be is whether or not America, the United States of America, not just Republican voters, but we clearly have seen that America over the decades have said no to female presidencies, or female vice presidential candidates. And, you know, we've elected every other man over every woman that's ran. And so, you know, when it comes to Carly Fiorina, I mean, when it comes to her, yeah, I mean, we've said it a few shows back, yeah, she will be able to field dress Hillary Clinton on that stage when it comes down to it. And, you know, I honestly believe that Carly Fiorina is the bigger nightmare for the Hillary Clinton campaign, because it's going to be Womano versus Womano, and so there's not going to be a lot of political incorrectness when it comes to some of the political correctness that they're going to put on that debate. But, you know, when it comes down to this, look, I mean, candidates are going to start to fall off. And even Rand Paul had a pretty decent night.
He did.
If Rand Paul would have talked like that over the last 12 months instead of some of the rhetoric on the far right, as you and I discuss all the time, you know, and actually communicate that way, he may be doing a whole lot better than he is today on that stage. But when it comes to Donald Trump, the Trump factor, you know, our big concern is going to be this. I mean, obviously, it's really irrelevant to us out here in California. You know, we don't vote until June. So really, it's just going to be a question who's left standing. So the big question for us is going to be, has Donald Trump, you know, basically slayed so many good candidates possibly, you know, just by saying what most Americans, which is why he's popular, believe? And, you know, like Cap just sent me a text. It's not about those high fluency words. It's just about get out there and fight. You know, the words are about fighting. And what are your principles? What's good for America? what's good for the state of California, what's good for the individual, not the collectivism. You know, whose wealth is it? Is it the individual's wealth? Well, I'm going to say that any individual gets out there and works hard. Guess what? You know, they have acquired it. Now, social responsibilities and obligations of an individual who's acquired and amassed an enormous amount of wealth, well, you know, that's ethics, morals, and values. That's a whole different discussion. But for us just to think that there's enough one percenters out here in the United States of America that's going to pay for free college, that's going to pay for every welfare program, we have to reevaluate that. But at the same time, the Marxist agenda, the Marxist march, Chris, as you made it, as you put it, is without a doubt their strategy and their thoughts right now are to do exactly what's happening, to put this strain on the American economy so that more and more people are not going to have the ability to be out, go out there and achieve the haves versus the nots.
Well, the Marxist movement was begetted out of the Industrial Revolution, mm-hmm. okay? And they put out this that the children and the women were lassoed off the farms, and they worked 6 days a week, 16 hours a day. And as a result, the chief executive officers made tons of wealth while they labored in the thing. This created a lot of envy mm-hmm. and hatred towards them. And this is what promulgated Karl Marx and Frederick Engels to write the book. Mm-hmm. And basically his message to the world is that we want a classless society with social order. Now, I want to take a few moments to address these protesting people who always talk about the 99% and the 1%. You know, we have to take from Adam Smith. It's not from the butcher, the baker, and the brewer that we receive, or from the goodness of the butcher, baker, and brewer that we receive our meal. It's from his own self-interest.
Right.
So, in other words, if you're a potato farmer or a rancher in Texas, okay, what drives you to get up in the morning and throw hay and move those cows? What drives you in the morning to backbreaking work to pick those potatoes, to get your steak and potatoes to New York? It's self-interest. It's greed. And that's what has built America, self-interest.
A lot of greed is good, and, you know, you're absolutely right. But, you know, the big thing that we've got to be able to start looking at, and like I said, this is a foundation show, folks. So if you find it kind of dry, you know, history's dry. That's all there is to it. Technical application of verbiage and theories, you know, is dry. But we've got to be able to formulate the thought. Look, Marxism, the writings of Karl Marx, yes, there were some evolutions that occurred. And unfortunately, with the principle, look, political philosophy in theory is no different. And I'm raising my eyebrows here mm-hmm. real quick. No different than theology. Look, you know, Christianity exists because people believe. Muslim ideology, because people believe. But eventually what happens is this. Once people accept it as a core belief, it's very difficult to change that core belief from an individual. So, you know, I mean, obviously a suicide bomber has got a very hardcore belief to be able to detonate themselves. Political ideologists do the same thing. And so as we go along, folks, pay attention to what we're trying to say, because the movement out here in the United States, the movement out here in California, is 100% scary, because Marxism, well, it led to what we know as communism, and then it led to socialism. And what do we know about both of those type of ideologies and the existence within society? They fail miserably, and usually they fail, resulting in millions and millions of deaths.
This is the 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you.
All right, folks, time for our favorite book. It comes from Ephesians 4:32. And be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. God bless you, America.
The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to
you.
And
of course, we always want to thank those men and women who go to work. They work at the toughest beat in the state, performing a duty so that you, our listener, up and down the state of California and across this great nation, can be safe.
It is our favorite day of the week. It is Friday, right after the news on 1240 KSUE, the 503 Report. About 20 minutes after the show, go to sierradailynews.com and catch a rebroadcast. 503 Report, where America's voice is heard, the podcast on iTunes as well. And grab a cup of coffee and join us weekend, Saturday at 7, right before the news and Swamp Shop. and Sunday at 7:30 before pre-program shows. Again, tonight, it would have been last night if you listen tomorrow, Lasset High School playoff action, and congratulations to the Bandits making it all the way to Las Vegas. The 503 Report, bringing Sacramento and the world to you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Watch me bleed, but you can't keep no chains on me. I was born free. Hello, America. Let me thank you for your time.